Local news, culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a Hooked on Fishing report for the Upper Delaware River. Carol Dunn from the Wayne County Historical Society on Main Street in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, invites us to stop by for a visit. We spoke earlier this year at the annual Wayne County Ag Day way back in February. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. A federal judge has struck down President Trump's executive order targeting the prominent law firm of Perkins Coie. The ruling deals a blow to Trump's campaign to punish law firms he views as political enemies. Here's NPR's Ryan Lewis.
In her ruling, U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell says that no American president has ever issued an executive order like the one against Perkins Coie. But Howell says, in purpose and effect, it draws from a playbook that dates back to Shakespeare in his famous phrase of, quote, "the first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers." Howell's ruling framed Trump's executive order as an attack on the independence of the legal profession and the broader judicial system and their foundational principles. She said punishing lawyers for representing clients or causes the president doesn't like is unconstitutional. Three other firms have sued to challenge Trump's orders targeting them. Perkins' case is the first to be permanently blocked by a court. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Many within the legal industry have condemned Trump's targeting of law firms, but nine have reached deals with the Trump administration. Press freedoms are sinking to unprecedented lows. That's according to a new report by media watchdog group Reporters Without Borders. Its annual World Press Freedom Index, finding journalism conditions are now difficult in more than half of countries. Here's NPR's Amy Held.
Violations of press freedoms can look obvious. In Russia and North Korea, among the worst-ranked countries for journalism, regimes hold an iron grip on information. And in Gaza, journalists have been killed and newsrooms destroyed in the ongoing war with Israel. But Reporters Without Borders also finds a less visible, still insidious problem: economic pressure. Now at its worst level in recorded history, it can look like ownership concentration and advertiser influence, a race to prioritize clicks over reporting, leading to disinformation and propaganda. The survey finds press freedoms dropping in the U.S., largely led by the decline of local journalism. The U.S. now ranks 57th out of some 200 countries. Amy Held, NPR News.
To Australia now, where the ruling Labour Party has won the general election, delivering a second term to Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, as Scott Maiman reports from Canberra.
A clear win for Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. His Labour Party has won a second term in office.
We take up this task with new hope, new confidence. Together we are turning the corner, and together we will make our way forward with no one held back and no one left behind.
For the opposition, it's a massive loss for the coalition. Conservative leader Peter Dutton had been campaigning with President Trump's style policies.
We'll rebuild from here because we know our values.
But after Dutton was voted out, his party is leaderless for now. For NPR News, I'm Scott Maiman in Canberra, Australia.
And from Washington, you're listening to NPR News.
This week on This American Life, any fan of rom-coms will recognize this moment.
I was immediately, like, more attracted to him than I'd ever felt attracted to anybody before.
And this one.
And he just so very lightly pressed his lips up against mine.
Okay, but then, how about this one?
My very own red, bloody handprint is on his white wall.
Real life rom-coms. That's this week.
Tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Sweetwater fishing guide Evan Padua has a Hooked on Fishing report for May on the Upper Delaware River. Carol Dunn from the Wayne County Historical Society on Main Street in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, invites us to stop by for a visit. We spoke earlier this year at the annual Wayne County Ag Day back in February. But first, here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The Ada Aquarid meteor shower will reach its peak Monday morning. The shower has a broad peak, so the next couple mornings will also be a good time to watch. Aquarius will be low in the east before dawn, but the meteors will appear in all parts of the sky. Given dark skies, the Ada Aquarids will produce 10 to 20 meteors per hour. But for our listening area, the number of meteors will be fewer as the Aquarids will favor more southerly latitudes. The further south you go, the later into the morning the sun will rise. The later sunrise means more dark time to watch for meteors and will allow for Aquarius to climb higher in the sky. Aquarius rises in the early morning hours and does not climb very high in the sky. It is a difficult constellation to pick out, as none of the stars in the constellation are very bright and the stars do not form a distinct pattern. This year's shower coincides with the first quarter moon, yielding favorable skies. The first quarter moon will set around 2:15 a.m. tomorrow and 2:45 a.m. on Monday. This will leave the pre-dawn sky dark and moonless for the shower's peak. The Aquarid meteors are bits and pieces of the famous Comet Halley. This will be the first of two times that Earth crosses the path of Comet Halley, with the other time being late October. Look to the east in the hours before sunrise over the next several days for your chance to catch an early morning meteor shower.
For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
When I was standing in that river with water to my knees, shadow moving in a pool beneath those trees, staying here till the sun goes down, even if I freeze, fishing, living, feeling free.
For Radio Catskill and Farm and Country, this is Evan Padua bringing you Hooked on Fishing. Early May officially marks the beginning of mayfly season on the Upper Delaware River. The copious amounts of bugs you see near or on the river are different species of mayflies, caddisflies, and stoneflies, also known as trout food. Matching the hatch with a 9-foot 6-weight fly rod and a 4X leader will have you correctly prepared to catch a trophy brown or rainbow trout from the Upper Delaware River. Trout will be observed eating bugs almost daily from midday until about dark for at least the next 6 weeks. Proficient fly casting and fly presentation are two keys to success when fly fishing the river. Sometimes the trout are easy and willing to feed on your flies, but often they can be picky and perplexing, causing the angler to be very sneaky and calculated to be successful. Early mornings are a good time to subsurface fish for trout with nymphs or streamers on a fly rod, or spinners, spoons, and Rapalas on spinning rods. The trout will be active so long as the water temperature stays below 68 degrees. The American shad are here. The front-running schools are up to at least Narrowsburg by this point, and the low, clear water are good conditions to locate shad. However, they bite best during the cloudy days or low-light times like mornings and evenings. Water temperatures between 50 and 60 degrees are ideal for good shad fishing. These shad are anadromous fish that live in the saltwater and spawn in the freshwater. 80% of them will die after they spawn, and the dead American shad will be observed floating down the Delaware River from mid-June through July. I want to give a big shout out to Kat and Larry Judd, whose recording of Fishin', Livin', Feelin' Free is the song you hear before and after my Hooked on Fishing segment this year. This song is literally my life soundtrack. It is available for download on iTunes under the Gone Fishin' Band. For Radio Catskill, Farm and Country, and Hooked on Fishing, this has been Evan Padua, casting off.
The eagle flies, I hear it cry, my brother in the air. Two of us are drifting down along the Delaware. Die, let find us in that fishing hole we share. Fishing, living, feeling free. When I'm standing in that river with water to my knees, sea shadow moving in a pool beneath those trees. Staying here till the sun goes down, even if I freeze. Fishing, living, feeling free. Fishing, living, feeling free. Yes, I was fishing, living, feeling free.
Here is Carol Dunn, the executive director of the Wayne County Historical Society. We spoke at the 2025 Wayne County Ag Day at the Honesdale High School.
Hi, my name is Carol Dunn. I'm the director of the Wayne County Historical Society in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. We represent all parts of Wayne County, and we're here at the Agriculture Show for Ag Day, I think they call it, for Penn State's local extension office. We have a booth here along with maybe 100 other people. A lot of activities going on today in the gym here at the Honesdale Middle School complex. And at our booth, we have a challenge for people. We brought four really old objects from our museum collection. And we're asking people, do you know what they were used for years ago? One is a French-style bean maker. You'd put your raw green beans in it and turn the handle and turn it into French green beans, you know, long and skinny. And another one is an ear horn, which today, of course, is that what takes its place is a hearing aid. This is probably 100 years old. It's long before batteries or electricity. We have a jeweler's lathe, which has no electricity in it. It would have been hand-turned. And then a spindle from some sort of a silk mill or a sweater factory here in Wayne County. They're all from Wayne County. Now, I've given you the answers, so if your listeners come and look at them now, they're going to know, but they better act like they don't.
Well, tell me where these objects were found. We're surrounded in Wayne County by farmland, but the towns have lots of small businesses.
That's right. So all the objects that we have in our museum are related to Wayne County in some way. So the green beaner could have come from anybody's kitchen, but it has to have a connection to Wayne County for us to put it in our collection. The spindle came from some fabric mill or sweater mill or silk mill. We have many spindles or spools. Unfortunately, it doesn't have any of the fiber on it anymore, so we're not sure did it have silk on it or whatever. The ear horn just came from someone's house in Main Street. The object that I called a jeweler's lathe came from one of the jewelers on Main Street in Honesdale. So different sources. We do have a wonderful collection, and from this collection we put exhibits up for people to come and see. And our big spring opening is Saturday, May 3rd, free to the public that day. And we hope that everyone marks that on their calendar. Come to the Main Street Museum at 810 Main Street on Saturday, May 3rd, public open house, and we will have new exhibits waiting for you to look at. And of course, we have the standard ones too, like the 1933 model of the Sturbridge Lion is with us at the museum, and other things related to the transportation of coal across the county and so forth. Just, we have a really good, solid museum. We're very proud of it, and we're proud of the fact that our community trusts us. They give us things to put in our archive, and we take care of them correctly, put them in our computer searchable software and so forth. We have over 20,000 photographs related to Wayne County, some going back as early as like maybe 1875. The earliest picture of Honesdale about then with a camera. I mean, in order to have photographs, someone's got to bring a camera to Wayne County. So we're just very happy with the things that our community entrusts us with, and we take very good care of those things.
Well, I know this county has a long history from the 17th century. What are the oldest things that you have?
We have some very old documents. Wayne County was formed from the county below south of us called Northampton County in 1798. We had our 200th anniversary. It was 27 years ago. That was a big deal when we had our 200th anniversary. We have a few things that date before we were Wayne County where we live, but not a lot. There weren't a lot of permanent European settlements yet. We have things prior to that in abundance because different archaeological digs were done near the Delaware River, and we are fortunately from these scholarly digs. It wasn't just someone going out with a pitchfork in their backyard. These were scholarly digs done by college professors with college students. We have over 4,600 arrowheads and other items like that, grinding stones that came from the Lenape people. So we have a big display called Faces in Clay, clay objects and so forth in our museum that explains what the peoples would have been like before the Europeans came. Of course, with the coming of the Europeans, we have early road maps. I think our oldest paper objects would probably be about 1780, 1790, somewhere along in there. We take really good care of those things, you know, the correct temperature, the correct humidity. You don't touch them unless you have a reason, but they're scanned and searchable so that a person can find them in our software.
You seem very knowledgeable. Do you have a background? Do you call yourself a historian, or does Wayne County have an authentic Wayne County historian?
We do have an authentic Wayne County historian. His name is Peter Becker. He writes for the Tri-County Independent. He used to write for the News Eagle and the Wayne Independent, but they merged to form the Tri-County. Peter Becker is a gem to our community. With regard to my background, I had another career. I retired from it 10 years ago, but I'd been volunteering at the museum since 1998. And although I did not ever train as an historian, that is not my title, I've learned and I've read a lot, and I'm there to answer questions or find research answers. We have a wonderful research library in our museum. And by doing that research to answer other people's questions, we're sort of watching them and learning what they discover about our county and our area. I've learned a lot. So I'm not officially an historian with a capital H, but I've learned a lot.
Well, and you present yourself very well. I must say, it's an honor to speak with you. And I'm curious, what can you tell us about the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Wayne County in Milanville, Pennsylvania?
Skinner's Falls Bridge is dismantled and taken down by PennDOT, according to the agreements that I've read. And we are considered a consulting party with regard to this, so they do send me updates that a 1903 bridge and the metal with salt and rain and ice for all those years, 122 years, that it has played out the life of the metal. But the hope that it will one day be rebuilt. Maybe not in my lifetime, because they're going to have to budget this. And we all know that budget cuts are abounding right now. But one day we hope that a bridge would be put back there with some sort of historical information about what that 1903 bridge meant to the community crossing the Delaware River at Milanville. So where do I sit on this? I think I'm probably more on the realistic side. Personally, I'm not in charge in any way. But I do know that metal has a lifespan. And when the metal goes through that lifespan, it is no longer safe for the community to drive their vehicles on it.
From what I understand, there's a talk of mitigation to the community to help with the heartfelt sentiments. And have you been called on to help with the mitigation?
I have not been called on. We have not been called on to help with mitigation. However, we have on past projects where PennDOT was involved, been able to give recommendations, have a meeting with Zoom, for example, or sometimes in person. And for several decades, we have been consulting parties for times where, unfortunately, something historic can no longer stand. Another example would be in 2002, 2003, fields near Waymart were turned into a federal prison. And part of what was the transportation corridor to bring coal from the Carbondale area to Honesdale, load it onto the canal boats and take it to the Hudson, this huge transportation corridor, part of that was destroyed to build the federal prison. But that's an example of something that we were involved in the mitigation on. So mitigation, basically defined from an historical society point of view, is that organization gives us, the people of this county, of this area, something in exchange for what historical remnants they have taken away. And yes, we do hope that we will be consulting on that. We've done a lot of research on the bridge. Very interested parties have come to our research library, and we've shown them everything we have, everything we can find about the 1903 origin of the bridge, photographs and books that people had written about crossings on the Delaware and things like that. So we're very eager to help people get whatever information they need, and we will continue to do that. And we hope that we can be a consulting party when the decision is made what mitigation will be given to the community for the removal of this bridge. And I hope one day there will be a new one, and I hope I can drive across it.
I so much appreciate your knowledge. What else would you like to say about the Wayne County Historic Society?
Well, we were founded in 1917, so we're old. But as I said, we're trusted by the community. We're in a building on Main Street in Honesdale that dates from 1860, and we do welcome visitors. We also own a canal park near Hawley. It's called the DNH Canal Park at Lock 31, where there's 17 and a half acres for people to just roam and enjoy. We have 2.5 miles of basically flat trail, goes right down to the Lackawaxen River, crushed stone parking lot. If a person wants to bring their cross-country skis this time of year, they can. So we're eager to have that saved because the canal bed itself is there from the original 108-mile-long canal. 108 miles are not available anymore. You cannot walk the length of the canal. It's private property to a certain extent now. But down at our canal park, you can walk on the actual towpath.
Where were those 108 miles from where to where?
It started right behind our museum on 810 Main Street in Honesdale, where there was a large loading area. And you and I would have been swimming in water in what is now a parking lot. They loaded those canal boats with coal that came from 17 miles away in Carbondale. And then 108 miles later, that canal boat would have been at a place called Rondout, which today is part of Kingston, New York. And there they would have been unloaded. They would have turned around with new goods, maybe furniture, crockware, things that people in Honesdale and along the way needed. And they would have come back without the coal. And the coal then would have been generally taken to the New York City area on the Hudson River in larger boats for running industry and heating homes. It was high-grade anthracite coal, one of the best grades of anthracite coal in the world, 17 miles from Honesdale. The canal would have gone farther, but if you know the local geography, the canal could not go up over what's called Farview Mountain or Moosic Mountain near Waymart. There was no water source. You can't have a canal go up to the height of 1,000 feet and not have any water for it to run on. So the canal ended at Honesdale, 108 miles to the east. It would have then connected with the Hudson River. So it's called the DNH, or the Delaware and Hudson Canal, 108 miles long. Yep.
Getting back to Honesdale, what is the oldest structure in town, in the town of Honesdale?
That's a good question. We have a map that shows Honesdale in 1850 with sketches around the outside by some sort of an architectural genius. Of those sketches on the outside of a large map, about 3 foot by 4 foot, it was found in Town Hall, and we got it digitized, and we have a copy of it in the museum for people to look at. Of those structures in that sketch from 1850, three of them still are standing. But what we've never done, and I don't know if the information exists for us to do it, is to say, okay, these are just the buildings that were important enough to be on that map with streets and layout of the town in the middle, and then these little cameos of important buildings around the outside. We know, for example, that most of the churches that are on that 1850 map were then torn down and a better, larger church for that denomination was built. The synagogue isn't built yet. So there's a lot of buildings that either transitioned after that map or weren't built yet, so they're not on there. But there are three that are there. You drive by them and never notice that they were on an 1850 map. And you'll just have to come to the museum and I'll point at them for you.
Do you have a walking tour of Honesdale?
We do. It's not one that we provide, but we have a book that we sell in the museum called Walking Tour of Honesdale. And we also have a QR code on many different places that takes the walker from with the cell phone with the QR code scanner right to our website so that they can read what important facts are about this building. So there is a walking tour, not that it's led by someone at 3 o'clock on Saturday or whatever, but there's a walking tour that you can go on yourself, and there's a lot of really neat old buildings in Honesdale.
Okay, give us a website and some contact information for folks that want to get involved or experience coming to Honesdale and the Historic Society.
Great. We're always looking for volunteers, those people that want to help us for one day a year, like at our Canal Festival, or those people that want to come every Thursday morning for 4 hours and help us in the research library. If you're interested in helping us, we have a job for you. Could be picking up branches on the walking trails or whatever. You know, we'd find something for a person to do it that would make that person happy. Our website is WayneHistoryPA.com. And there you can find all the information, including phone numbers and like my email address and so forth. So WayneHistoryPA.com. I'll just end by mentioning there are 14 Wayne counties in the United States. At least once a week, we get an inquiry that really needs to be answered by Wayne County, New York, Wayne County, Ohio, Wayne County, Illinois, Wayne County, Kentucky, some other Wayne County. And we politely send back stating, we would be glad to answer your question, but you've reached us at Wayne County, Pennsylvania. And the reply is usually, oh, I never knew there was more than one Wayne County. So that's one of our problems. So make sure you specifically look for Wayne County, PA. That's where you're going to find us.
This is Rosie Starr in Honesdale, inside the high school. That was Carol Dunn, the executive director of the Wayne County Historical Society, 810 Main Street in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. For more information, their website is WayneCountyHistoryPA.com. For a day of history, fun, and community spirit, visit the Wayne County Historical Society's annual Spring Open House, Saturday, May 3rd, 2025, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. 810 Main Street in Honesdale. The event is free. It's perfect for all ages and offers an exciting opportunity to explore Wayne County's rich history. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers, Keith Hubbard, Evan Padua, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guest, Carol Dunn, Executive Director of the Wayne County Historical Society. Thank you for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live at wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.